What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees, your one-stop shop for Yankees content. I'm Ryan Garcia. To my left, the one and only Chris Drew. The New York Yankees are in their offseason, as is all 30 teams in Major League Baseball. It's bad grammar there, but big news last night. Aaron Judge claims his third AL MVP. Earlier in the week, Brian Cashman spoke to the media. He talked about a player he thinks the team is very much in need of bringing back, and one of the Yankees' top prospects working out not just anywhere, but in Yankee Stadium, and is planning on getting more work in Tampa now that the weather's cooling down in New York. We're going to talk about all of that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell to get updates on our uploads. And without further ado, Chris, how are we doing today, my man?
Dude, really good. Living the dream. Obviously, like, any chance to talk baseball feels good. Kind of in off-season mode. It's like kind of sifting through the rumors, what's real, what's not, and then kind of trying to read between the lines on little things that we see going on, you know, within the Yankees org.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, the biggest news of the week that were Yankee-related, not just in general with baseball, was Aaron Judge winning his third AL MVP. He narrowly defeated Kyle Raleigh in terms of first place votes. It was 17-13 in advantage of Judge. In terms of overall votes, it was 355-335, again, advantage Judge. So really, it was two voters that made the difference. Had two voters voted in favor of Raleigh instead of Judge, this would have been a different outcome potentially. I think it was one of the better AL MVP races of the last decade or so. Chris, what are your thoughts on Aaron Judge's MVP? Number one, do you believe he deserved it? And number two, was it closer than you expected?
100% believe he deserved it. 100% know he deserved it. And this should be his fourth that we're talking about, but instead it's the third, obviously. You know, it's funny because, like, this year, a lot of the discourse between the two started a little bit earlier than it did in 2024, when it was between Bobby Witt and Aaron Judge. And, you know, Aaron Judge, I think, made it a little bit closer by missing a little bit of time. And then, obviously, like, Cal being a catcher kind of mattered. But I was shocked that it was this close, Ryan. Like, that's where my head went. I thought this was going to be kind of not quite a runaway train, but just a step closer than that. And I think for historical context, it's really important to continue to reward Aaron Judge for the Bonds-level seasons that he's having, because that's simply what it is. Best bat in the sport, you know, best player in the sport, and it's important for him to get that third MVP. So closer than I thought it would be. You know, Cal's a great player, really, really great player, but not this year.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think that Aaron Judge was the best player in not just the American League, but in baseball this year.
Yeah.
Led baseball in OPS, led it in wins above replacement on both Fangraphs and Baseball Reference. I talk about Baseball Reference not being a necessarily reliable narrator for a catcher's season because of the lack of framing, weight, and defensive value. But even if you look at Fangraphs, which is very favorable for catchers, it gives them a massive defensive adjustment, which it should. Toughest defensive position on the planet. Raleigh was a very good defensive catcher this year, but I think the totality of Aaron Judge's season, he had one of the greatest right-handed hitting years of all time. And I think that because he's had 2 years, I'd say, that were better than that season, people kind of just forget how historically dominant it is.
The LeBron thing. It's just the LeBron thing.
It's funny. I was talking to my little brothers, and we were essentially talking about what was the best version of LeBron James. And they go, 2018 LeBron, clearly. And I go, wait, hold on. You guys got to understand. 2012 to 2013 LeBron James was both the best defensive player in the league, in my opinion, and the best offensive player in the league. But kind of like with Aaron Judge, it's pick your poison. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's kind of got – you could say 2022 was his best because he hit the most home runs that year. 2024, for me, is his best season, and I don't think that's actually particularly close to me, but not everyone's going to agree. It was probably his worst defensive season of his MVP years, funnily enough. But it was the greatest right-handed hitting season we've ever seen, though. Mm-hmm. And this past year, I think – is the third for me. I think it's a pretty comfortable third place for me, but that shouldn't mean it gets underrated. It is right up there with those 2 years. So, Chris, I guess I know I didn't really think about asking this, but if you were to rank the three Judge MVP years, how are you ranking them?
This one is my second, and then last year would be my first, and then obviously the last one was slide in a third. I was really impressed with this year. I thought he was really, really good. I mean, the tear he got off to start the year, I thought was incredible, and it's wild because he got up to the crazy hot tear to start the year in 2025, but in 2024, he had a horrible start to the season, and the fact that he was almost able to win the Triple Crown with a horrible start to the season, to me, that 2025 season, I don't think we'll ever see it again. It's incredible. So, you know, he's the best in the sport, so that's how I would rank him. I think 2024 was the best year. 2025 could add a shot to be the best year if he would have played the full season.
I think if he played the full season and also didn't have to DH, the defense, he was such a good defensive right fielder prior to the injury. I think he would have ended up with around, let's say, 10 fielding run value, or let's be a little more conservative. I'll say 8 or 9 fielding run value.
Okay.
But that is still an elite defensive right fielder. On a per-rate basis, he was an excellent defensive right fielder. He had a 204 WRC+. That is just 2 points behind his 2022 season. Again, three incredible years, three very deserving MVPs, and as Chris alluded to, potentially should have been his fourth MVP given what he did in 2017. My next question for you, Chris, is I think it's fair to say that Judge has had to face, in these MVP years, three incredible years.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani in 2022, Bobby Witt Jr. in 2024, and now Kyle Raleigh in 2025, all of whom might have won MVPs if they played in the other league year. What do you make of ranking those three guys? Who is the best challenger to Judge in these 3 years? Not in terms of voting, just who you thought was the best player, and then kind of go 1 through 3 on Aaron Judge's MVP opponents.
I mean, if I'm ranking seasons, this is going to feel like really messed up. And I'm trying not to be a prisoner of the moment because these are three ridiculous seasons, like all-time great seasons. But I would go 2024 Bobby Witt number one. I would go 2022 Ohtani number two. And then I'll go Cal Raleigh's, you know, 60 plus number three. And I could flip-flop 2 and 3, but I think Bobby Witt like was legit, maybe in terms of all-around baseball player, maybe the best on the planet for kind of a glimpse in time. And it took – I mean, I know that the Judge won unanimously, which makes that year even more impressive. But, like, I love Bobby Witt. That 2024 Bobby Witt season, that is a coach's absolute dream. That's the dream player. That's if you tell a coach to build a player in a lab, it's 2024 Bobby Witt Jr. So that's how I'd rank the seasons, not to slight Shohei, not to slight Cal. I could flip-flop them. I could be convinced of the other. But for me, really easily to cement that 2024 Bobby Witt year. And I'm curious where you went, because I think when it comes to, like, baseball value, I think we kind of value similar things. Kind of we get to those different destinations through different roads, and I was curious if you kind of had the same grouping.
I actually have the exact same ranking. Bobby Witt Jr. to me is the clear-cut one, and we actually agree on who we could flip-flop. It's 2 or 3 for me.
Yeah.
I have Ohtani 2 narrowly. It's very narrow, and if someone's saying I would have Raleigh 3, that's fine. Shohei Ohtani was a top-3 pitcher in all of baseball, at least in the American League, and was a 130, 140 OPS plus kind of bat. That kind of season to me is
special.
Yeah, and it's just as special, and I'd actually argue it's more unique
than the Cal Raleigh season. Yeah,
but I will say uniqueness doesn't matter to me that much with MVP voting. I think Ohtani just marginally was the better player, but I think Witt was very obviously the best MVP 2 of the Judge MVP years, which is really funny because voting-wise, it was the easiest Judge win of those three years.
The largest gap. I mean, what Bobby Witt did, it felt like prime Mike Trout, but make it a shortstop.
Yeah, and it's crazy. People did not give Bobby Witt Jr. the flowers that they gave Cal Raleigh, and I thought that was a bit unfair because if you look at the voting, Aaron Judge had a larger F-War lead over Cal Raleigh than he did over Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah.
And I thought I very rarely heard look at the margin of error for WAR. It's about one win. I didn't feel like I heard he's a shortstop, the physical toll on his body. I just kind of felt like Bobby Witt Jr. got very disrespected in that MVP conversation, more so than I think most MVP twos of that caliber do. So
yeah, that's the most forgotten too, because of how dominant Judge was. But that was an absurd season from Bobby.
Bobby Witt Jr. also followed that up with a 7-win year. It's like,
and it felt quiet. Like it was the quietest 7-win year ever. Yeah,
which I thought Rafael should have gotten that, but that's a different conversation. But he won a platinum glove and was MVP 4 in a down year. Should have been MVP 3. I thought he was better than J-Ram this past year. Oh, I lied, by the way. It was an 8-WAR year, not a 7-WAR year. 8-WAR season. So that guy is a freak of nature.
Yeah.
That guy is unbelievable.
Freak.
And, you know, I'm going to give my props to Cal here, too. I mean, he hit 60 home runs, had a 161 WRC+, plus, and put up 9.1 wins above replacement as a catcher.
Yeah.
Not even, I mean, remove the as the catcher part. Just in the grand scheme of things, 60 home runs, 161 WRC+, plus, plus 11 fielding run value and 9.1 WAR. That is ridiculous. I mean, Aaron Judge, it makes what Aaron Judge has done in order to win these MVPs kind of crazy, because you step back and you go, he beat a 10-win shortstop, a 10.5 win shortstop. He beat a guy in Shohei Ohtani who, again, put up a 142 WRC plus. He hit 34 home runs in the same year where he had 5.6 WAR as a starting pitcher, 2.33 ERA in 166 innings. He qualified for the ERA title. 2.33 ERA. He beat that guy. And then he beat a catcher who hit 60 home runs and was a top, you know, 5 or 6 defender in all of baseball at that position.
I mean, you could argue that that's the three most impressive MVP wins maybe ever. I mean, if you were just to, like, think about it, Ryan, you're talking about he beat a absolutely historic, all-time historic season from Cal, an all-time historic season from Bobby Witt, because that's what that was, and then a hyper-elite pitching and hitting season from Ohtani that's in its own little realm. Like, those are the three MVPs. Like, there was no down years. It was it took three historic years. And honestly, it's funny because the one that would have been, because if you were to rank Altuve's season in that list, Altuve would be 4. And that's the one that he didn't win.
Clear cut 4 on that list.
Yeah, clear cut 4, and that's the one that Aaron Judge didn't win.
It's crazy because I had 2 tweets ready. One, if Judge won it, which is the one I did fire, which is best player in the league, wins it back-to-back years. Makes sense. The original tweet I was going to fire if he had lost was, there are only 2 players since 2017 to lead the league in OPS and wins above replacement and not win MVP. And both of those players were Aaron Judge.
Normalizing ridiculousness.
Yeah, there are four years in Aaron Judge's career where he's led the league in OPS and WAR. So crazy. That's incredible. I think it's his 5th year with an OPS north of 1,000 in a season, or perhaps his 4th. Just an incredible, ridiculous season for Aaron Judge, and the kind of year that I keep saying we're never going to see anything like it again. But I just feel like I just can't say that anymore with Judge, because
it's LeBron, man. It's LeBron.
Yeah, it really is. It really is a normalization of somebody who is that great. Chris, any final notes on his MVP year? Anything you want to round out with?
Just heading into next year, I think it's really cool that, like, instead of him going through big slumps that kind of had plagued him in previous years, Aaron Judge has shown the ability, instead of slumping, it's like only a certain part of his game slumps. So I think that, like, his ability to reinvent himself is really going to show itself next year, because 2 years ago, 3 years ago, like, sometimes, like, when things went bad for Judge, he would go through, like, really bad stretches. This year, when the power wasn't there and the timing felt off, he could reinvent himself in a moment and be like, okay, like, well, I'm just going to hit singles for a couple weeks until my timing gets right. I think that is something that, like, baseball feel-wise, I think a lot of people are going to feel next year. I don't know if you have thoughts on that.
No, I fully agree. I think that's such an excellent point when we have the conversation of Aaron Judge and the way he hit this year. You would just see stretches where I'm not hitting home runs. I'm hitting 300, 350, 400 over a stretch still. So it's truly incredible to see the evolution of Aaron Judge.
I mean, he's legit trying to make himself slump-proof is what he's doing with the way he's able to reinvent himself. And it's like the easiest tool is, like, in basketball. Okay, like, look, I'm LeBron. The three-point shot's not falling right now. My legs are a little dead. It's all right, cool. Like, I'm going to mid-range, get to the foul line, and I'm still going to be able to average my 30 points a game. I mean, we are seeing that reinvention during stretches where Aaron Judge is not hitting home runs. And look, like, this playoffs, you know, he got a lot of hate for some of the single stuff, but it's like, okay, like, look, the timing maybe isn't quite there for power. Until it gets there to start lifting the ball in the air, I'm going to make sure I'm hitting the baseball and getting on base. And I'm strong enough and the bat speed's fast enough that I can laser some singles and still be a weapon. And then eventually, like, you're going to have to run into me and I'm going to run into one. And that's kind of what we saw this postseason. So I think that is a unique trait that he has. And some other guys have kind of displayed that. I mean, Juan Soto earlier this year with the Mets, like, the power wasn't there, but it's like, okay, I'm not going to slump too bad. I'm going to slap the ball over the place. I mean, we've seen it from Vladdy for long stretches. Okay, like, I'm going to reinvent myself. The difference is the power tool and the contact tool, I think, on Aaron Judge are a little bit better. And additionally, teams are just going to walk you even more.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I look at Aaron Judge in the year he had, and I go, first off, he added a batting title to his resume this past year. Now he's a three-time MVP, a seven-time All-Star, a five-time Silver Slugger, a Rookie of the Year, a batting champion, a home run derby champion. He has 62.3 wins above replacement on Baseball Reference. I believe it's 61.6 on Fangraphs. He has a career 1.028 OPS. He is just that good, and he's on the verge of 400 home runs next year. He's 32 home runs away from that. For 1,000 RBIs, he is 170 away. I imagine that will take closer to 2 years, that being if he's healthy. That'll also cross off the 1,000 runs mark if he does that. So, yeah, just a ridiculous, ridiculous force of nature. And a 294 career average, I mean, he's going to obviously have the late career not being as good as he was in like prime years.
He's going to have the 260 years, we could say. He's going to have the 260 years.
But I mean, it's kind of crazy. He's only hit under 260 once, and it was in 2020. So I guess I haven't really appreciated the batting average part of it, but just Jesus Christ, that guy's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable player. And on that point, we're going to move on and talk about some off-season team-related stuff in regard to roster construction and all of that. And it is with Cody Bellinger, because Brian Cashman, and he very rarely does this. You very rarely see him candidly speak on a free agent. He was very adamant that he wants the Yankees to keep Cody Bellinger. This is what he said on Wednesday. We're very interested in bringing him back. Again, it's just, that's pretty blunt. That's pretty blunt. Very, very hard that we sit here and see Brian Cashman, or very rare we see him say that. He also said we'd be better served if we can retain him. Mm-hmm. He did also add, but if not, then we'll have to look at alternatives, ways to fill it, and see where that takes us. But it's pretty early in the process. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Of course, we'd like to have him back. I read that as Bellinger's plan A. I think Bellinger is their primary course of action for the outfield. Chris, how do you read that, and what are your thoughts on Cody Bellinger and his market early on?
We're going, like, just peel back the curtain, dog. Like, you and I compared notes yesterday. We talked for about 25 minutes about some things we've been hearing. Obviously, we both talked to a good amount of people, and I think this – very educated guess that the interest in Bellinger is plan A being Bellinger and I think it's going to be Bellinger and an arm. And I always told you that, like, look, Kyle Tucker was my option A1A, like Kyle Tucker no matter what. And if it's Bellinger, it can't be Bellinger instead of Tucker. It's got to be Bellinger and now it won't be Bellinger and Tucker, but it could be Bellinger and an arm. And, you know, one with high upside is what I would like. So, you know, at least there's not going to be any waiting around. I know a large portion of the, you know, Yankee fan base and Yankee people really want Bellinger back. Bellinger works. Bellinger fits. He's a good baseball player, offers flexibility. You know, obviously we've seen the defense multiple places, and we're going to talk about someone else in a little bit that kind of maybe opens up a different kind of lane for him as he continues to age if he does resign with the Yankees. But to me, this is Bellinger and Cashman is letting us know, look, like, we're going to go to town, and we do not think going to town is just one big splash. We think going to town is Bellinger and pieces that we think could end up blossoming into elite players that have a little bit more upside. So, and I know the Yankees are linked to some pitchers as well. So they view the pitching as something that needs to be addressed. And if they are going to be aggressive with that, yes, I get it. The answer is Bellinger. So that's kind of where I'm at. I also, you know, there's been some like question marks that I've had about kind of what the Tucker market is. And obviously, like, the Tatis grumblings, whatever, are out there as well, which I, you know, would be awesome. But obviously I don't think it's happening. So I don't know where you're at with this.
Yeah, so I want to start off by talking about Cody Bellinger in the sense of financial flexibility. I do agree that based on how we kind of have viewed or the early tea leaves with the Yankees, I don't think this is a spend $80 million in one winter offseason. I don't think that's what this is. And because of that, I don't see a world where they're going to add Kyle Tucker, add a starting pitcher, add a relief pitcher, and of course have to add a center fielder on top of that. And that is definitely part of the equation, and it should be part of the thinking we have this conversation. And in the case of Cody Bellinger, I think that is definitely possible with Bellinger, because you don't have to add a center fielder. You can add just a platoon guy with Dominguez if they do believe in Dominguez, which I have my doubts about how much they believe in him. But again, as a platoon outfielder, I would be stunned if they're against that. In the case of a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher, I don't think people talk enough about how bad the pitching was in the division series. People often point at the hitting as the thing that went wrong for the Yankees. The Yankees pitching staff had a 974 OPS against it in the division series. Like, the Blue Jays killed the Yankee rotation. And I think when we look at the rotation, they had a lot of guys who can get them through 162. Warren was the primary source of rookie Warren's value. Is he made 33 starts, and he was about a league average starter, slightly worse on a per rate basis. That doesn't carry the same way value wise in a playoff setting. Luis Gil, the value he provided was, while it wasn't sustainable, the results were good. Mm-hmm. And we both agreed we would take that over the opposite of that for the regular season. But come postseason time, that style of pitching does not translate to October. Rodon, I'm going to give him a mulligan because he had a bone spur and he had surgery on his throwing elbow. Therefore, I'm going to give him the mulligan. Fried, one really good playoff start. One really bad playoff start. I don't think there's anything that happened to it. I just didn't have it. When you look at the rotation for 2026, the only guys you're adding to that are Cole coming back from arm surgery and Schmidt coming back from arm surgery. Not to say that that's not meaningful, but those are two post-TJS operation guys. In the case of Rodon, that is a post-bone spur guy, and that was the same age in which Britton got his and fell off for his career. So I say it all to say I think pitching is a bigger need than people are giving it credit for.
No, it is.
Yeah. And I think the Yankees are going to operate that way this offseason. I think that's why Bellinger is going to be the guy I assume is their top target. So, Chris, how would you – okay, I guess this is the next great question or big question here. Would you rather sign Kyle Tucker and add – a back end starter, let's say like a Zach Eflin. I think he's like the good like bottom of the market, probably gonna sign for like $10 million starter. Or would you rather have Bellinger and Tatsuya Imai? What if you were the GM of the Yankees, what would you rather have?
Ooh. That's tough. I'd probably lean Tucker, but I really do love Imai. Like, I really do love the Imai-Bellinger combo. I'd probably lean Tucker just because, like, my big thing to you has been, like, as Aaron Judge ages, is there a player on this roster that can play at an MVP level or just, like, MVP 4-6 level? And I think Tucker is that. And obviously, like, I you know, the swing works in Yankee Stadium. Like, we know all that. It's like, can we have somebody that can be the best player on offense and us feel really good about it? And I think that the timelines line up. But with Imai, man, like, I'm really intrigued by getting him with Matt Blake. So probably Tucker, but it's really close. And I might, you know, eat and feel like myself and feel like flipping him. But probably Tucker would be my one. But with that being said, I'd be thrilled with either or. Like, I'd be absolutely thrilled with Bellinger and Imai.
I mean, I want to start by saying the Tucker and Eflin kind of grouping. Yes, it's an unimpressive starter addition, but I do believe that the impact of Kyle Tucker short-term and long-term does matter here, but I think from the Yankees' standpoint, what the pushback here would be, the short-term value of Imai and Bellinger is going to be greater than the long-term value of Tucker Eflin, or than the short-term value.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think from their standpoint, it's we have to build rosters that can win right now and not really worry about the future. I don't know how much I agree with that. I don't know how I feel about that, but I can understand that argument. I think the question just becomes, what can the Yankees do alongside Bellinger? That is what will determine the offseason for me, whether that's if they acquire Imai, if they get either a second starting outfielder, or B, a good platoon partner for Dominguez, really improving the bullpen, making sure the bullpen's in a really good spot for 2026. Those are things that are important to me. And I think at the end of the day, you've got to think about what's going to work in the postseason. You need guys who are going to be playoff starters, both in the lineup and the postseason, as in your rotation. And this team is going to need to make sure its pitching staff is better than what it is right now.
Bingo.
Because if you were to bet on Rodon's ERA going over or under where it was in 25,
over,
it's going to be over is the bet. For Fried, it's a less confident over for me, but I would say over, not by a large margin, but like it was, what, 2.7 this year?
Yeah.
I'd like bet on a 2.93.
Okay.
But that's like a soft over for
me. Yeah, it's soft over. That's a push, basically.
For Cole, yeah, I would say pushes. You know what? I'd say for Fried, I'd push on the ERA. For Cole, I'm not sure. I haven't seen his stuff post Tommy John, and I know his stuff declined at 24, but is that a decline because the elbow wasn't 100%, or was that a decline that will then be added onto by TJS? That matters to me.
Yeah.
And that uncertainty does, you know, weigh in my head as I think about my playoff rotation. Schlittler, I would bet on his FIP being lower, not his ERA being lower.
Okay.
So I would actually expect the ERA to be up, but the FIP to be down. I expect him to be in my playoff rotation. That's not an anti-Schlittler thing. It's just I think the ERA was also 2.7. So I'm betting on his process getting better, essentially.
Yeah.
That's two guys in Fried and Schlittler I'm very much locked in on, as I want them taking the ball in the postseason. I'm confident in that. There's just a lot of too much uncertainty in between after. There's enough lottery tickets where I expect some of them to go the Yankees' way.
Yeah.
But and mine just gives me less anxiety, you know?
Right. And like, also, like, no matter what Gerrit Cole's ERA is during the season, like, I like Gerrit Cole in playoff settings. Like, I just feel really good about it. And with Amaya, just a quick extra point, like, you know, Yankees are smart. They know that, like, the Japanese market matters, and it matters more than just perception. It also matters in terms of money. Like signing Amaya, like, you're going to help your money long-term. Like, that's going to be a very, like, valuable contract long-term. If you get him at around that 160 mark, mm-hmm. and it's a 27-year-old, like, that helps you. So that's the other the money side of it that I think is worth at least a quick mention.
Yeah, and I think, again, with Amaya, it depends on the money. I think we talked about this where we wouldn't want him at $200 million, but he's young, so you can take a big number, like 150, yeah. 160, and really spread that money around over 7 years.
I think we both hard capped at, like, 170, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't – I'm not doing anything crazy just to get back in the Japanese market. I'm paying market value for a pitcher to get back into the Japanese market.
I'm willing to spend a little bit over market value because I understand how the return works with Japanese market in terms of, like, getting some of that money back.
I do think 170 is – like, I consider, like – when I say market value, I don't mean, like, it's got to be the exact median outcome.
Yeah. I know what you mean, yeah.
But I wouldn't look at any really – free agent. There aren't any free agents in this class that I'm going, oh yeah, I've got to do something stupid for this guy.
Juan Soto. Like, Juan Soto, you're willing to go over market value.
Like, I'll say this bluntly. If I was a owner of a baseball team and I was capable of making the offer the Mets made to Soto, I would have made that offer.
Yeah.
And I really wouldn't have blinked twice. That's just me. Mm-hmm. For the situation with, like, Judge, there was a point in time where the question was, will the Yankees go over $300 million? The Yankees went over $350. I mean, the Aaron Judge contract's a steal. That dude's returned, I think on Fangraphs it says like $210 million on the investment. That's crazy. He's essentially already completed 66% of his contract value. But again, as we look at Amaya, I think that we can agree he's good for the rotation. He helps the staff. I think we want to improve the pitching staff. But part of the equation here, too, is – Bellinger.
Can I ask a question to you about Amaya? How much, like, I know you're a numbers guy. How much do you value some of the things that, like, aren't quantifiable in numbers? Like X-Dog, I guess. Like, how much do you quantify that? Because, like,
it's important.
I'm a feel guy. Like, that is where I am, and that's why I fell in love with Cam Schlittler. And I haven't really seen anybody talk about it, but, like, how much do you value the stuff that, like, doesn't show up on the stat sheet in terms of, like, you know, clenching your teeth, let's get it going, like, wanting to compete and, like, being a psycho. Do you value – does Ryan Garcia value that, and at what clip?
So there are two ways that – it's kind of funny. I'm going to quantify almost what you're talking about, but not, like, saying that it is quantifiable. Just kind of
throw it. No, just throw it to your brain.
His average fastball velocity increases with runners on base.
Yeah.
That is very much something I'm into because that's something that Freed, that Cole in 23 did. It's very – It's such a good sign for body control. Like, guys usually think that, oh, if I throw slower, I'm going to throw more accurately. No. Your release points, if you decrease arm speed, think of it like when you're, if you guys are just thinking at home, think if you decrease arm speed, if your arm's got to be here at the same time, every single time, I don't know if you can see this, but if your arm's got to be by your ear at the same time, every single time, and you're decreasing arm speed, that mental clock that you've got in your head is off. You're going to be. You're going to be late every single time. You're going to miss, and miss.
Luisio.
The fact that Amaya can do that is crazy in the first place. It's hard. I hate when people go, well, just slow it up and speed it down. It's hard, man. It's hard. Now, number two, innings pitched per start. He averaged over 6 2/3 innings pitched per start. That would have led Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So when we contract one off day that he doesn't get every time through the rotation from the NPB to MLB, those are two plus signs to me because I know Major League Baseball is not going to be asked to throw 6 2/3 innings pitched every single start. That's not going to be his average innings per start, even if he peaks as an ace.
Mm-hmm.
Never will he ever be asked to do that in Major League Baseball. So I'm not worried about the rest. The fact that he has that kind of body control, I'm not worried about the big leagues being an issue for him. The quotes he had about Yamamoto, where he's like, there's not time for celebrating. I'm trying to be the best pitcher in the world. He is too. He just strikes me as, I mean, the people I've talked to have described him as a competitor. A competitor, a dog. That does matter to me. I do think makeup matters because we're talking about taking a guy who's never pitched in Major League Baseball and putting him in New York. You sure as hell need to scout the person he is when you put $160 million in anybody. In anybody. That's not even, like, if people think analytics are against that, I think they're wrong.
Yeah.
At least based on how analytical, quote-unquote, teams kind of use pro scouting nowadays.
And also, like, the thing that I really find interesting with him is, like, when you watch him pitch, like, he adrenaline dumps and then locks back in. And, like, not a lot of Japanese pitchers are, like, hyper animated. He's one of them. And then, like, the quotes he had about, like, you know, he was kind of thinking about staying in the MPB, but he realized that, like, it was getting to the point where hitters weren't even going up there to do anything other than not strike out. They were okay with hitting ground balls. So I think he's got some, like, there's, like, I always use the line, there's a psycho deep inside him. I think there's a psycho deep inside him, but kind of will come up in the same way there was, like, a psycho deep inside Cam Schuller.
Yeah, so, like, I agree.
That is kind of where I'm at. I was curious your thoughts on that, because I'm obsessed with that kind of thing.
And again, for people at home, I know I mentioned this kind of ad nauseum, so I apologize if I'm being annoying about this, but Luis Yield, 27.4 years old. Will Warren, 26.4 years old. The average age of your starting pitcher is going to increase marginally if you import Imai and replace him with one of these guys. But I'm also going to note, like, Alan Winans is their number five starter right now. All it takes is one spring training injury for him to become your number five starter again. So when people say, oh, how are you going to fit these guys into your rotation? We have this conversation every year.
Every year.
Never works. Never works.
I do feel good that, like, this year it looks like there will be no Cookie or Marcus Stroman, like, that.
And that's going to help during the year, too, because I expect Cruz will become more major league ready the more time he gets to spend down there.
Yeah, Elmer.
There's going to be – so in April, I think that's a complete no-go for Cruz. I don't think Cruz gets a chance at all in April.
I agree.
If Cole or Rodon can be back in late April or May, that decreases the chances of the Yankees needing to pull him up early. Cole comes back, decreases the chances of him needing to come back early. If any injuries occur from that point forward, instead of an April-May debut, it might be a July debut. And at that point, there's enough year left where, like Schlittler, a good enough finish to the year, he's going to push up that depth chart. And it also is deep enough to the year where Cruz should have some time in the minor leagues. Maybe LaGrange, maybe they find something with the command and he explodes. Maybe Hess is the guy who breaks out. I don't really know. I would bet on Cruz being the first guy up, but you kind of never really know with these things. My point here is I want those guys to get half a year before we've got to really seriously talk about bringing them up.
No, I agree.
And Schmidt is going to be back at some point, I think, in August or September, so that'll help too. Chris, any final notes on the rotation and Imai?
No, love it. I want him, and I think we're going to get him. So I'm
confident the Yankees are going to be very much in that. Like, I very rarely kind of go on a limb with stuff like this. I'm the type of person who prefers to underreport than overreport. I think that's just better for fans. When you overreport, it's just
you open yourself up,
right? And also, it's just like you're just overstating something that hasn't happened or isn't going to happen or isn't likely. It's why we're not sitting here and continuing to go, yeah, guys, Kyle Tucker's going to be a Yankee. No, that's overreporting. Just because, like, they might. Just because Bellinger might have, like, if his market's too strong, maybe the Yankees look at Tucker. That doesn't mean that they want Tucker. It's just that maybe this, maybe that. But in the case of Imai, that's probably the guy I'm the most confident they will have a number one or number two bid on. With that being said, though, the outfield, young players, all of that, it kind of all ties in beautifully with Spencer Jones, who was working out at Yankee Stadium, outfield drills, some BP, all that stuff, and is going to transition to working in Tampa because if you're in New York, it is cold as hell right now. So, Chris, how do you feel about – and what do you as an outsider kind of perceive when you hear that Spencer Jones, it's November, he's not with family right now, he's out there getting work. He's out there going out there and getting some work.
that means that, like, the hyper-competitive trait that a lot of people liked with him at Vandy, the hyper-competitive trait that he's kind of displayed for a while now is kind of coming into play, and he's serious about, you know, at least competing for that opening day center field role. I mean, if you're Spencer Jones, you know that if you do your job and you impress people at a high clip, the Yankees are not against having you play. I mean, Austin Wells played a ton. Obviously, Anthony Volpe, no matter how you feel about him, played a ton. Like, Spencer Jones knows that if he impresses enough and does the little things, he can have a shot to play center field. I think he's a really good center fielder. I think he's a really good outfielder. Not like the twitch monster, but, like, you know, straight line speed, get up to top speed decently well, good range, and obviously the huge arm. Like, he's a guy that I think that, like, you see this, and I obviously, you know, I cover a lot of college athletics. When guys see that light at the end of the tunnel, they start running a little harder, start sprinting a little faster. And him working out in the cold is that. It's like, look, like, I, you know, Vanderbilt, it's pretty warm there. Obviously, like, you know, being down in Tampa, like, I want to be ready to field the ball in Yankee Stadium no matter what the weather is. So I'm really impressed by it. I like it. It means he's hungry. And also it means that he knows that there's an opportunity for him to start there next year.
Yeah. And I will say this with Spencer Jones. I really do believe he'll stick in center field, at least for the pre-arbitration and arbitration years of his major league time. Maybe when those 5 or 6 years are over, he'll have to transition to a corner outfield spot. Sprint speed is one of the first things that go for any big leaguer. Even when you're 30, 31, it's usually not where you were when you were 24.
Yeah.
Jones has lots of pop in his swing. We're aware of this. Contact issues are still there. We get that. But for me, at least, I think it's the fact that he can be a guy who, when he faces kind of, you know, not great big league pitchers, can key. All it takes is one swing on one mistake pitch, one fastball that he gets that he wasn't supposed to get at a certain part of the zone, and it's gone. And I think that the learning curve, the bumps in the road, the Yankees are going to be well suited to give him reps if they believe that player is capable of being a big leaguer. And we're going to learn a lot about the Yankees' views of Jones this offseason. They treated him at the deadline like someone who they view as a future big leaguer that helps them. Will that continue into the offseason? Will they view Spencer Jones as someone who is, you know, more of just, you know, puff it up, and then get him out of here? And, mm-hmm. and you know, we're committed to Jason Dominguez. But with Cody Bellinger, even if you sign Bellinger, you still kind of have to make a choice between one of Dominguez or Jones eventually. They're both primarily guys you want to play against right-handed pitchers. I wonder how Dominguez's bat and his glove progresses. He's currently playing winter ball right now. I've got to say for Dominguez, what he's got is, I think, a higher floor. There's a better chance that Jason Dominguez has a major league role, a big league role, than Spencer Jones does, based on the fact that he's good against right-handed pitching. This year, he had a 768 OPS, 116 WRC plus career, 122 WRC plus hitter against righties, 780 OPS, 270 hitter, 344 on base. That's going to give you play. You're going to play because of that. Spencer Jones, there's a chance he can't hit. But with Dominguez, the downside is the glove is not close between these two.
Would you take an O'Neill Cruz level season from Spencer Jones if he played center field, or is that still not good enough?
No, I take that. I mean, okay. I think O'Neill Cruz.
Here's O'Neill Cruz 2025 numbers. Batting, I mean, slash line 200, 298, 378 slug, then an OPS of 676, and the OPS plus was 87.
Well, I think what people kind of forget about his year was his expected OPS was very good.
It was.
Or not very good,
was.
But it was above.
It was
average.
Better. It was better.
And when I say the kind of, I always look at, like, comparing seasons with more expected numbers. Okay. Now, when it comes to awards, I believe that should be a results thing. But when you say kind of the profile of a year, would I take that? If O'Neill Cruz, and we talked about this with Luis Robert Jr. as well, if these two guys just repeated their 2025 mm-hmm. seasons, they would likely have been above right. average hitters playing center field, which is very valuable. And in the case of Spencer Jones, if his expected OPS is 730, 740, and his actual OPS is similar. And I would also believe that Spencer Jones would be a BABIP guy. I think his BABIP is going to be higher than the big league average.
Oh, yeah, because he lifts the ball better than those guys.
Exactly. His bat path is better than those guys.
Yeah.
If Spencer Jones were to be a 730, 740 OPS guy in 2025, he's playing almost every single day. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be a revelation for the Yankee roster. They would be able to put Bellinger in left field. They'd have a big power bat against right-handed batters. They would probably still want a right-handed platoon hitter, but if you mean to tell me that the New York Yankees put together a team where they've got a, you know, a 110 WRC plus guy against righties who has that kind of power, that kind of speed, that kind of defense, they'd be in a very good spot. And this is a big, big offseason for Jones. He'll be put on the 40-man roster regardless of how the Yankees view him. There's not a chance on planet Earth they let him go wide open into the Rule 5 draft where he would almost immediately be claimed first overall pick. Even if you don't think he's that good, a team would be able to claim him and then trade him. Yep. So I think he's going to get an opportunity. The Yankees talk a big game about, like, certain prospects, sure, but people can say, well, they did that with Durbin. Yeah, and he was a good big leaguer, and they were right. They were 100% correct. They were on the money, actually.
Yeah, I love Caleb Durbin, so.
Yeah, they're very rarely publicly, like, yeah, this guy's going to get a chance to play at the big league level, and that player is not someone, like, he didn't say that about Lombard. He actually strictly said, I don't think he's going to come up next year.
Yeah.
Which is, Chris, you deserve that shout-out, because you were saying this since August. I mean,
yeah,
since August, man. So, yeah, I kind of want to get your thoughts on that too. Do you think, like, Lombard not in 26?
We won't see Lombard in 26. He, for all the mistakes I believe that maybe that Yankees feel like they may have made with Anthony Volpe, they will not do that with George Lombard Jr. George, the bat's a little bit behind right now, kind of a savvy IQ player. They're going to wait. Obviously, like, you know, dad, a big league coach, eyes on him too. I mean, they gave him number two. So they're going to take their good old sweet time. And there's going to be an 8-month window where people are pounding the table for him to come up before he comes up. It's not going to be like, okay, look, he's here. It's going to be like people are going to be begging for him to be brought up, and he still will not be brought up. Like, that's the kind of development they're going to go with Lombard, to me.
I think, again, it's one of those things, Chris, where everyone forgets how they thought of Anthony Volpe.
Bingo, 100%.
Everyone forgets what they thought of Anthony Volpe. And that's, to me, probably the most frustrating part of that conversation, where people just kind of forget, oh, yeah, I said the same thing about Volpe. I did want him to come up in 22 when he was in double A.
Mm-hmm.
I did think he was better than IKF at that point. I did want him to come up in 23. I wanted him to lead off. I wanted him to do X, Y, and Z. I thought the world of him. So many people did, too. Yep. Analysts, scouts. Like, the Yankees weren't alone in that.
They weren't.
Their fans were in lockstep. Analysts were in lockstep. It hasn't worked out the way that we hoped it would offensively to this point. I think he's a better defender than I ever thought he would be. But I think we were all hoping for a guy that we could move around the infield at second or third and have him hit leadoff for us for the next 5 or 6 years. But at the end of the day, I mean, with Lombard, I think it's good to be careful. With Jones, again, I don't want them to – they shouldn't bring anybody up who they don't think is ready. They're in a contention window. They should be too good to have to do that.
Yeah, and, like, George isn't ready yet. Like, here we go. You know me. I'm probably one of George's biggest fans. Followed him really closely from the beginning. Like, I was there at his, you know, double-A debut. Like, I have, you know, was in the dugout for his double-A debut. And, like, I went, try to see him as often as I could. He's getting there, but he's not there yet. I mean, honestly, like, I think that what's more likely is that he finishes the year next year in AAA. That's it. But it won't be early.
I agree.
Like, he'll finish the year in AAA. That's it.
I mean, he's 20.
Yeah, he's 20 years old.
Right, he's 20.
Mm-hmm.
So if he needs until he's 22 to come up, fine by me.
Yeah.
I mean, if he came up at the start of 27, he would not be a 22-year-old. He'd still be 21, I believe.
Yeah, he'd be 21. So. And also, like, I just want to see him just continue to grow in spring training. And obviously, like he's getting older and stronger. So I am expecting to see a slight uptick in pop this year. I know that he went away from kind of the noisy hands, wanted more quiet hands, and helped his bat-to-ball skills. Really, really smart, intelligent hitter. And to take pitches in double-A is really hard because the double-A umpires are not very good. But I do think when he does get bumped up to triple-A, you could see kind of a pretty hot tear for a quick sec. So I'm excited about Lombard, but it's not going to be next year. It'll be the year after.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Well, I think it's a good way for us to wrap, too, because it gives us the opportunity to talk about Lombard. It gives us the opportunity to kind of talk about the contributions that the farm system either A, will, or B, won't have in 2026. I think Jones is – it's either Jones or Cruz as the best guy who I'm very confident will debut for the Yankees in 26.
I'm positive that it'll be Jones. Like, I'm positive we'll see Jones first. I think Cruz will be on the Schiller timeline.
I think, again, with Cruz, he's less MLB ready.
Yeah.
He's you can't. It would be really irresponsible to have him come up after two, really one Triple A start. He has one in the postseason, but like that, yeah, I don't know. I'm not really a big believer that that really counts. But Chris, any final thoughts as we wrap things up here on, you know, number one, just Jones and Cruz and guys that can come up in. Number two, just yeah, man, the Judge MVP, just crazy.
No, man, just happy that we get to watch an all-time great, and I'm excited to tell my kids that I got to, you know, so-and-so's cool, you know, Fernando Tatis III is cool, but I got to see prime Aaron Judge, so that's all.
Yeah, man, I'm happy for Judge. I couldn't be happier for him, and I've got to say I'm very excited to see how the farm system aids the Yankees in 26. They helped them a lot in 25 with Rice, Warren, and the debut of Dominguez. Well, not the debut, but the first full year of Dominguez.
And Schlitter.
How can I forget? Oh, I was trying to get to everyone and then name him last, because that was probably the most out of pocket, wild, crazy. That starts probably one of my favorite starts ever, the Red Sox one. But how will they do in 26? That's really the question that I think a lot of fans will have on their minds when it comes to the farm system. But if you guys enjoyed today's video and today's podcast, we really appreciate your continued support over here at Fireside Yankees. You guys can check us out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, this YouTube page, all under the handle at Fireside Yankees. And, again, we thank you all for your support. We'll see you guys in the next one. Have a great rest of your day. Peace out.
Perfect.